topic number three. Several months ago, there were big headlines about a supposed new American secret weapon. It's called the stealth plane. The weapon which is actually involved is a specialized hybrid machine called a subcraft. It's the same weapon that I made public 2 years earlier in Audio Letter 37. And early this year, January 1980, the Bolsheviks here tried to use it against Russia. The result was a disaster, as I reported in Audio Letters 53 and 54. So now, the spectacular-sounding stealth plane has become just a publicity tool to make nuclear war sound less suicidal. To judge by all the recent publicity, one would think that stealth is a radical new concept in warfare. But stealth, trickery, deception, and surprise have been the prime ingredients in military strategy since ancient times. And today, my friends, we live in an age of stealth. Stealth in politics, stealth in economics, and above all, stealth in weaponry and warfare. During the past 6 years or so, I've made public many secret developments in weapons and warfare. I revealed the secrets of both Russia and the United States because I believe you need to know, and knowledge is power. A secret war is raging right now, and already you and I are suffering the consequences. And if it is not stopped, it will soon explode into all-out thermonuclear war. There is only one way to stop the deadly cycle of war now underway. That way is to put an end to stealth and trickery and replace it with the truth. The truth about America's gold scandal. The truth about stealing of elections with unregulated voting machines. And the truth about a whole new age of secret weapons, which are unknown to the public. The new age of stealth in warfare is everywhere today. It makes up a complete spectrum from deep beneath the sea to outer space. To begin with, consider submarines. From the very beginning, submarines have always been weapons of stealth. Their outstanding advantage has always been their ability to escape detection. The modern age of nuclear submarines was inaugurated by the United States in 1954, and it was America that conceived a ballistic missile submarine, first launched in 1959. Today, our leaders still reassure us that American submarines remain second to none. They have to admit that Russia has several times more subs than we do, but they gloss over that with stories that Russian subs are noisy or leaky or their crews are not very smart. So, in effect, they tell us, don't worry, we can handle a submarine war with Russia. There was a time when quality was in our favor, but that time is long gone. Today, the United States is losing badly in the secret war to control the world's oceans. New generations of Russian submarines are entering a new era of their own. For example, there are the new Oscar-class cruise missile submarines. These can launch cruise missiles to attack our aircraft carriers and other surface ships. They can do this while still submerged, far beyond the horizon. And there are the new Alpha-class attack submarines, which are without parallel in the world. Submariners always say that a submarine's worst enemy is another submarine. And Russia's new Alpha subs are the worst enemy yet to our subs. Unlike the United States, Russia has mastered the use of titanium for submarine construction. And unlike America, Russia has big supplies of titanium for use in all kinds of new technologies. And Russia no longer sells titanium to the United States. So the new Alpha subs have double hulls of titanium. And they are now the deepest diving, fastest operational submarines on Earth. Its speed has been estimated in the west at 45 knots. But, my friends, it is actually well over 60 knots. In most situations, it can actually outrun America's best torpedo, the Mark 48. And it can dive almost a mile deep to escape attack and slip away under complex ocean currents. But the biggest shock so far in Russia's submarine program took place earlier this fall of 1980. It's a submarine launched from a shipyard near Archangel on the White Sea. When Western intelligence officials got their first look at it, they could hardly believe their eyes. Traditionally, submarines have been known as boats rather than ships because of their relative smallness, but not this submarine. It's a giant, a ballistic missile submarine about the size of an American World War II aircraft carrier. Western intelligence officials are mystified as to why it is so large, but I can reveal the reason to you right now. The giant new Russian submarine, codenamed Typhoon, is another first. It's the world's first ballistic missile submarine with a reload capability. It can empty all 20 of its ballistic missile tubes at a target in war. Then it can reload the tubes with 20 more missiles carried aboard. So if need be, Russia's Typhoon sub can mount 2 nuclear attacks. Like the Alpha subs, Russia's awesome new Typhoon has a titanium hull. It's not as fast as the sleek Alpha sub, but very fast even so, and it can dive extremely deep. Meanwhile, what does the United States have to answer all that? The answer is America's new Trident missile sub. It carries 24 missiles compared to the Typhoon's 40. It's slower and cannot dive nearly as deep with its non-titanium hull. And it's also 3 years behind schedule and still slipping. And there are several reasons for that, some of which have been mentioned in the news lately. But one major reason for our crumbling Trident submarine program is not in the news. It's the widespread use of narcotics among Trident shipyard workers. Many workers are not involved, but many are. And as a result, there is a tremendous turnover in personnel. Another result is defective welds and mistakes in critical piping. When the mistakes are found, they have to be done over, sometimes more than once. And my friends, absolutely nothing is being done about it. The other side of the coin in undersea warfare is anti-submarine warfare, or ASW. Lately, we have heard brave stories that there have recently been ASW breakthroughs by the United States. These are based on extremely complex, computerized sonar listening networks. But as I first revealed some time ago, all new Russian submarines produce artificial noises in normal operation. That's why the new Alpha subs are thought to be so noisy. The noise is deliberate. When war comes, the noisemakers called cavitators will be retracted. The American sonar nets will listen in vain for the familiar noises. Instead, Alpha subs and others will swim at high speed toward America, whisper quiet. And as they do so, the Russian subs will strike, as submarines always strike, by stealth. The true condition of America's anti-submarine warfare was summed up in the New York Times last month on October 5. A senior American naval officer was quoted as saying, "To find a submarine, you need to know where to look. Otherwise, you'll have to use a large share of your anti-submarine resources just to find and kill one submarine. And in wartime, that is not practical. You're better off waiting for him to attack." Unquote. He explained that then we could more easily detect the sub. But he added that a ballistic missile sub could fire its missiles before being caught, quote, so it probably doesn't matter, unquote. My friends, it would still be a standoff in submarines if Russia had the same problem we do in finding subs. But they don't. 5 years ago, in 1975, the head of the Russian Navy announced a breakthrough in ASW. And it was not a bluff. He was talking about psychoenergetic range finding, or PRF. I first reported on Russia's PRF in Audio Letter 42. It was the key to Russia's destruction of American subcraft early this year. And Russian manned space satellites use PRF to keep track continuously on all United States submarines. When war comes, the positions of our own submarines will be relayed to Russian attack submarines. This will be done by means of the Worldwide Submarine Communication System, which I revealed in Audio Letter 16. Russian attack submarines, including the new Alphas, will be vectored in toward our own ballistic missile subs. Our own subs, older and slower, will be caught by surprise and unable to escape. And without warning, Russian nuclear torpedoes will destroy our ballistic missile submarines. When I mentioned Russia's worldwide submarine communication system in Audio Letter 16, a crisis was underway. It was the underwater missile crisis of 1976. At that time, the Russian Navy was planting underwater missiles within our own territorial waters, and they were using submarines to do it. The missiles involved were small, short-range missiles with nuclear warheads. Once planted, these missiles can be launched from their own underwater resting places by satellite command, and they were planted very close to their coastal targets. The result would be zero warning time for an underwater missile attack. The missiles were planted in bays and coves along America's shoreline by a special type of submarine. This was the missile planting mini sub, which I described in Audio Letter 16. I mentioned in that tape that, quote, these special submarines are very difficult for our undersea sonar detection nets to pick up because the hull is treated in such a way that it absorbs sonar signals instead of reflecting them, unquote. 4 years later, we hear an echo of this concept in the so-called stealth plane. For aircraft, the treatment is to absorb radar instead of sonar, but otherwise it's the same idea. Russia was planting underwater missiles along our shores by stealth, and our own leaders were responding with equal secrecy instead of warning you. When I made these things public over 4 years ago, certain newsletter writers and others went into a frenzy. For whatever reason, they did their best to tell their readers not to listen about the missiles. They tried to say that waterproof missiles lurking underwater are impossible. Likewise, they poo-pooed the very idea of sonar-absorbing submarines. But today, we are 4 years closer to nuclear war one. And the closer catastrophe looms over us, the more it casts its shadow. The New York Times article of last month, which I mentioned earlier, is a good example. It mentioned, quote, Soviet subs are usually coated with a material that absorbs sonar impulses, unquote. And as for the underwater missiles, listen to some words from a recent letter to the editor. It was published on September 25, 1980, in the Washington Star. The writer is Captain John E. Drame, formerly program manager of the Navy's Project Hydra. He says, quote, we can easily waterproof missiles such as MX and launch them from a vertical floating position. The United States Navy's Project Hydra demonstrated this launch technique with test missiles of ICBM size in the early 1960s, unquote. And a further quote, a Hydra-type missile can also be floated up from a submerged submarine to the surface and launched from there, the technique used for Soviet SLBMs, unquote. In light of these words, recently published, what I first reported in the summer of 1976 becomes almost routine. The things I reported then were well known to be feasible in intelligence circles, but out of the sheer ignorance, if nothing else, certain newsletters and organizations wanted people to ignore my warnings. Fortunately, large numbers of my listeners did not ignore those warnings. They applied heavy pressure to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as I suggested, and action was taken for a while to defuse the crisis. In the letter to the editor I just quoted by Captain Drain, the reference to ICBM-sized missiles is interesting, because a few months after I reported on Russia's underwater missiles, I learned about our own. America's underwater missiles are radically different from those of Russia. I first revealed them in audio letter 20 for January 1977. Unlike the Russian missiles, which are small, America's underwater missiles are huge. They are giant waterproofed ICBMs deployed on the ocean floor. But they share one thing in common with those of Russia. America's secret fleet of underwater missiles were deployed by stealth. It was done in a super-secret operation known as Operation Desktop. And in the spring of 1978, Operation Desktop was reactivated off America's East Coast. America's secret government told you nothing about these hush-hush preparations for war. Instead, they said they were drilling for oil. The Baltimore Canyon area of the continental shelf was publicized as if it were an underwater Alaska full of oil. But before the alleged oil drilling even began, I told my listeners not to expect any oil bonanza, because they were planting missiles, not searching for oil. And sure enough, after the missiles were planted, we were told it was all a big flop. No oil of importance had been found. These are some of the things going on under the seas of the world. But if we look up instead of down, the pace of stealth warfare is no less frantic. For example, we've heard recently about the so-called stealth technique for evading radar. America's cruise missile is actually a stealth weapon intended to sneak into Russia underneath radar. But ever since radar was invented by the British in World War II, countermeasures against it have been of interest. It started with a dropping of metallic chaff into the air by attacking bombers. That blinded the crude radar of those days. Then the radars were improved to see through the chaff. So next came electronic countermeasures, or ECM. ECM gadgets create radar waves of their own in such a way as to cancel out radar reflections off the plane. Using ECM, a 10-foot missile can be made to look like a small bird on radar. And that was accomplished long ago by the mid-60s. Now, we are suddenly hearing about radar-absorbent coatings and rounded surfaces. Rounded surfaces tend to diffuse radar waves instead of bouncing them back to the radar antenna. That makes an aircraft hard to detect until it gets very close. My friends, those techniques can be applied to some extent to airplanes. But they are made to order for another type of machine in the air above us. Rounded surfaces diffuse radar, and the ultimate in a rounded surface is a sphere. As a result, Russia's electrogravitic weapons platforms, the Cosmospheres, are natural stealth weapons. I first revealed Russia's deployment of Cosmospheres in late 1977 in Audio Letter 29. The first few were used in an attempt at intimidation by Russia. They created giant rumbling air booms along our east coast and elsewhere. But later, as more Cosmospheres were deployed, they shifted to a stealth mode of operation. Normally, Cosmospheres on patrol overhead hover at an altitude of around 100 miles. At that height, they are invisible to all normal radar. But on several occasions, the Russians have wanted the cosmospheres to show up on American radar. It's one way to send a message in a crisis. And so, in tense conditions, the cosmospheres are sometimes ordered to descend to low altitudes. Low for a cosmosphere usually means from 5 to 7 miles up. As they descend, they come closer and closer to ground-based radar. As a result, they gradually become visible on radar as they near the ground. If the cosmospheres are ordered to descend rapidly, the effect on radar is very dramatic. 1 minute, our radar shows nothing. The next minute, blips appear all over the screen. The cosmosphere blips seem to materialize out of nowhere. I first reported low-altitude threats by cosmospheres as long ago as Audio Letters 30 and 32, and they have happened again several times since then. In Audio Letter 46, I also reported that Russia has a smaller fleet of second-generation cosmospheres. These can hover like all cosmospheres, but their greatest advantage is speed. They are stripped of weapons and operate as high-speed transports just above the atmosphere. If need be, they can accelerate all the way to orbital speed, and operating far above the Earth as they do, they are invisible to radar. At least twice in the past year, the Russians have made use of their high-speed cosmospheres for satellite snatching. The first occasion was almost a year ago on December 11, 1979. It was an American satellite called SATCOM 3 made by RCA. It had been in orbit for 5 days without trouble, but suddenly it just disappeared from radar screens and stopped communicating. That was the last we ever heard from SATCOM 3. A Russian high-speed cosmosphere had cruised up and matched orbits with it. Then the cosmosphere cargo bay was opened, and SATCOM 3 was pulled inside. When the door was closed, it cut off the signal of SATCOM 3. And as it was gobbled up by the radar-invisible cosmosphere, SATCOM 3 seemed to disappear. Last May 9, 1980, it happened again. That time, it was a Japanese satellite called Agami 2. Like SATCOM 3, it just seemed to disappear without a trace. Russia was sending the message to Japan not to play too cozy with America's secret war buildup. When it comes to stealth in space, the Russians are old hands. About 3 months ago, on September 1, 1980, a fascinating letter was printed in the Cleveland Plain Dealer. It was written by A.L. Jones, the director of the Soheil Radio Satellite Tracking Station from 1958 to 1964. He said, quote, "The technology for making aircraft invisible to radar detection is neither new nor is it proprietary with the United States military." In midsummer of 1962, the Soviet Union made a public announcement that it was launching a Cosmos Earth orbiting satellite which would be invisible to radar detection. The satellite was successfully launched, and it carried on board a radio transmitter which could be used to confirm that it was in orbit, unquote. He mentions that NORAD requested radio tracking data from the Soheil station and continues, quote, "Normally, radio tracking data is not needed by NORAD unless radar and optical methods prove ineffective." Apparently, this was the case. After approximately 2 months, the radio transmitter in the satellite ceased to operate, and the space vehicle became invisible to all methods of tracking, unquote. My friends, for more than 3 years now, Russia has controlled the military use of space. Russia now has many satellites, including manned satellites, which are not even being tracked in the West. For this and other reasons, America's military plight has become untenable. And yet, the Bolsheviks here are still bent on nuclear war against Russia. They believe they will survive, as I explained in Audio Letters 56 and 57. But they don't care how many of the rest of us suffer and die. One way or another, they are determined to set off an American nuclear first strike against Russia. In Audio Letter 55 last June, I revealed one of the keystones of Bolshevik nuclear war planning. It is America's secret mobile missile, the Minuteman TX, the traveling Minuteman. TX missiles are already deployed along existing railroad tracks in our northern states. Meanwhile, the elaborate publicity cover-up for the Minuteman TX program is continuing. This includes controversy over the alleged MX missile, as I reported in Audio Letter 55. And now, it also includes stories about a possible speed-up of the mobile missile program. On November 18, the New York Times reported that this could include, and I quote, making some Minuteman missiles mobile, unquote. As usual, the news is far behind the facts. I can report that the initial deployment of Minuteman TX missiles is now virtually completed. Now a second phase is underway. In Audio Letter 55, I describe the special mobile launch car that carries each Minuteman TX. Now, one by one, each TX car is being joined by a second car. On the outside, it looks just like the TX car, but the missile inside is totally different. The missile in the second car is an anti-cosmosphere missile, or ACM, and it is armed with a cobalt ionization bomb, which I first described in Audio Letter number 42. In Audio Letter 55, I described the launch sequence that is being planned for the TX missiles. But now, something extra will also be taking place. When the order comes to launch the TX missiles, the ACM will go into action first. Without waiting to slow down, the cover will be blasted off the ACM railroad car. That will expose the ACM missile itself, resting on its launcher. The ACM is far smaller than the Minuteman, and its launcher is angled upward slightly. So the moment the cover flies off, the ACM will be launched. When the ACM takes off, it will accelerate with 100 times the force of gravity. Less than 1 second after launch, the ACM will be traveling more than 1,000 miles per hour. And because it takes off almost horizontally, it will be an impossible target for the cosmosphere overhead to aim at. Less than 10 seconds after launch, the cobalt ionization bomb will explode in the upper atmosphere. That is supposed to disable the cosmospheres briefly, as I described in Audio Letter number 42. And with the cosmospheres neutralized, the Minuteman TX missiles themselves will be launched at Russia. At least that is the plan of the Bolsheviks here. But cosmosphere crews have already been given orders intended to nullify the plan. When the ACM is launched, they will not even try to shoot at it. Instead, they will start firing their charged particle beam weapons at the Minuteman TX railroad car. They will have about 10 seconds to destroy it before the cobalt ionization bombs explode, and that should be more than enough time to vaporize every TX and its locomotive. But by that time, the kamikaze nuclear first strike against Russia may be impossible to stop. And if it is, the consequences for America will be total destruction. Stealth and secrecy will end in complete disaster. My friends, I have nothing more to add at this time as a last-minute summary. I hope to record my next audio letter, number 61, around mid-January 1981. Until then, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. I wish you all a Merry Christmas and a happy Holy New Year. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.